the Euro Exposition from local TV.
Hello, good morning. Welcome to the final edition of the Euro Exposition podcast. It unfortunately ended on a bit of a sour note with England getting beaten in the final. But never mind, you know, we'll power on. We've got plenty to talk about today. We'll go through the tournament and get our opinions in general about it. We'll also, awards are coming out. So it'll be game of the tournament, goal of the tournament, player of the tournament, and moment of the tournament. Join us morning as ever, two fantastic people alongside me. Joe, good morning to you, mate.
How you doing, David? You all right? I've calmed down a bit now, you know.
Just a bit, mate. Just a bit. Joe's got a very special surprise for us a little bit later on. And, of course, the one and only Dawn. It is her birthday today. Happy birthday, Dawn.
Happy birthday, Dawn.
Thanks. 21 again.
I love it. Obviously, it would have been a perfect way for England to wrap up your birthday, wouldn't it? Just win the trophy. Where would you have been right now, let me ask? Because, I mean, England win that tournament Sunday night. Would you even be here right now?
Probably in a gutter somewhere, to be honest.
Yeah. And do you know what? You wouldn't want to be anywhere else.
No. Wrapped up in my England flag.
Yeah, that's exactly where you want to be. No, happy birthday, Dawn, and thank you very much for still joining us this morning. So let's get started then with just in general, the tournament as a whole. It was a year delayed and we were all anticipating it, and then it gets underway and we get a month of football. Unfortunately, it ends with defeat for England. But Joe, what did you make of Euro 2020 in general?
Well, I just love tournament football, really. It's helped me like fall back in love with the game somewhat, because sometimes I get a bit disheartened by the domestic football and the way it goes, but it's helped me feel like a kid again as Euro 2020, like I'm sure many others. Just a festival of football, really. I'm not sure the multiple countries worked in terms of the destinations for the game, but Alexander Seferin came out and said it's not something that they will be doing going forward. But apart from that, and obviously England losing, it was a really good tournament to watch. And the nation came together, as in regards to England, like they did in 2018. So all good from me besides the result, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think we all love tournament football, don't we? I mean, the qualifiers will come round in September and you'll see, like, you know, there's 30 million people watching the final. They'd be lucky to get 10,000 watching England against Hungary at that stage. But tournament football's fantastic, and I'm with you, Joe. The concept was a nice idea to go around the countries and travel for the 60th anniversary, but it didn't work. You couldn't have picked a worse year, could they, with coronavirus and all stuff like that. But I'm glad it's going back to one country. It's obviously going to be Germany in 2024, so let's look forward to that. Dawn, what did you make of the tournament?
Yeah, I thought it was great. It's amazing, isn't it? Like, having fans back, that was a big thing for me. I know we started off with less fans in the stadiums, but it's just great to have football back. I agree with Joe in that, you know, at times it's quite depressing domestically, being an Evertonian or a Burnley fan, I guess. But when it comes to tournament football, you generally support your own country, which obviously you do, and then unless you're you, David, and you support Italy, and you have a second country, don't you? So if England don't make it, you root for someone else. So it's always interesting, and it was just great to see England do as well as they did. We didn't lift the trophy, but as good as, I think, you know, we were amazing, and like Joe said, after such a tough year and a half, brought the country together.
Yeah, absolutely. I backed every team England played against, not just Italy, by the way. Boo. Came out winning in the end, didn't I? So I'll take it. Yeah. I had some money on Italy as well, actually, I totally forgot about, which is always nice. I put a couple of quid on them each way to win the tournament, and it wasn't until the final I was like, oh, all right, I've picked a few quid up here, I'll take that. I was only 14 quid, mate. I think I had £2 on them or something like that. Don't do big bets, Joe. It's a dangerous game, that, mate. Obviously, we've got to touch on the abhorrent racism that we've had at the end of the tournament. Joe, is that in any way sort of put a dampener on things for you?
Yeah, I just felt quite sad yesterday, like the majority of the country, because we've seen in Euro 96 how highly regarded the players were by the fans after not even winning the tournament. And now in the age of social media, we've still got that by thousands and thousands. But like with social media, the people who probably would have done it back then as well have now been given the voice to bully people and say nasty and racist things about a 19-year-old lad, a 21-year-old lad and a 23-year-old lad when they wouldn't have had the guts to step up in front of 60 million people, let's not forget, because all the people watching at home as well, and take a penalty to try and help the country. And when you've got Marcus Rashford feeding hungry children all over the country as well, I just don't believe these people deserve it, like everybody else, really.
Absolutely. I mean, Marcus Rashford, particularly a fantastic human being. But we're getting a bit lost in also going the other way. Like, it doesn't matter what he's done. It doesn't deserve it regardless.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I know he's a fantastic human, but it doesn't, if he wasn't a fantastic human, it doesn't mean it's okay. Do you know what I mean? At the same time, it just makes it even worse. Dawn, for you, has it spoiled the enjoyment of the tournament at all?
I don't think it's spoiled it. I think we've sort of... it's something that happens all the time. I know on the Gladys Beat podcast, we mentioned numerous times about these keyboard warriors who, you know, most of them wouldn't say anything face-to-face to any of these people. But the social media companies just give them a platform to hide behind fictitious names and say what they want. And I just can't believe we're in 2021 and we're still dealing with like racism, hooliganism, easy for me to say, and like homophobia and that stuff. It's just, you know, if a person's a nice person, treat them like that, and everything else is irrelevant for me.
I'm totally with you. Totally with you. I know Joe mentioned this yesterday, but they're just cowards. They're just saying stuff on the internet because they think they can get away with it. They think they're anonymous, and that's the issue. They think they're anonymous. They think they can get away with it, and that's what needs to change. That's where the likes of Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, and all Facebook and Instagram are the same, but that's where they need to step in. If they know what you like in terms of advertising, this is the thing that gets me. They can pinpoint adverts for you based on your content and the things that you like and the things that you post. If they can do that, they can spot a racist and block them and report them to the police, surely.
Would I just be able to touch on something Dawn said there?
No. Obviously,
all right. Obviously, I'll touch on it later in the show, but like Dawn said, if a person's a nice person, that sort of means more to me than any sort of football result. That sort of comes secondary to me, that, you know, these people are with us as a country and they want to play for us. We haven't had that for like 25 years, and for people to disrespect people like that, it's just madness.
Yeah. Yeah. As Dawn said before about, you know, I'm not England's biggest fan by any stretch of the imagination, but when Matt Rashford stepped up, I was kind of like, I hope you score, mate.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, because as you say, there's more to football, and that man has done so much for this country, so much more than probably every politician in the country themselves. They don't do nothing compared to him.
Right.
So for him to miss, I was just kind of like, I'm gutted, mate. And as I say, it doesn't really bother me with England and stuff, but for him to miss, I was devastated for him.
Yeah.
But like you say, the politicians in this country, Tyrone Mings had to go with Priti Patel yesterday, didn't he?
Tyrone.
And just like, it's true, these people, I mean, you laugh at the likes of Boris and Trump when he was in charge of America. These people being in charge of a country, when they are racist people, they're prejudiced, they do their own thing. They don't lead by example. And if you've got them leading the countries, then, you know, God help.
Exactly. I think, you know, there's been several instances of Boris being racist, so he can't even claim not to be a racist. The amount of articles that he's written over the years when he was an alleged newspaper journalist, somehow backhander. You know, that there's the proof for that allegation right there. And I said this yesterday, Dawn, on the podcast, the fact that they've allowed or gone against people taking the knee and said, no, you know, we're not going to condemn people for booing it. That's facilitated this happening.
Yeah.
That's what's happened. Do you know what I mean? So anyway, let's look back at the tournament itself and some of the bad stuff. So let's just one other
negative before we kick on. I didn't see till yesterday all the stuff that happened outside Wembley. I mean, that's a disgrace, people storming the doors and getting in. Obviously, I've been to Wembley a couple of times and the checks weren't amazing. They didn't have loads of stewards and stuff, but what happened like on Sunday just shouldn't happen. I mean, after Hillsborough and stuff like that, people just need to learn.
hopefully going forward, we'll learn from all the processes and obviously get better at it.
I think obviously it's policing. Policing's poor in this country. It always has been. But yesterday, I mean, they were just thugs. Oh, sorry, on the final, they were just thugs trying to chase their way into the game with no tickets. You know, and the policing needs to be better. That's what happened at Hillsborough with the policing. It wasn't acceptable. You know, there's just people trying to go to a football game there, whereas the final, there's idiots trying to run into the ground and storm the ground. And that could have been a catastrophe. That's a million times worse. Could have been the idiots there. But as you say, not enough stewarding, not enough police. That seems to me like a bit of an English thing now, a bit of a British thing. Just cut back as much as you can and then hope for the best. Like, just save as much money as possible on it, make as much. Doesn't work.
Apart from that, a good tournament, really, like we're saying.
Yeah. Well, it says a lot when Qatar are having a go at you. Like, I've seen a newspaper article in Qatar this morning with it's like a cartoon of two English people battering each other, like blood everywhere, and then a newspaper with a finger wagging, and the headline says, like, something along the lines of, oh, Qatar can't host the World Cup. Neither can you, mate, the way you are hanging around and behaving. Do you know what I mean? It's ridiculous. So if Qatar are even having a go at you, you've got issues. You've got big issues. Anyway, not far away from the Qatar World Cup, by the way. Only a year and a half, only a year and a half, which isn't bad. It would have been worse if it was last year, if it went ahead as planned, Euro 2020, because they've had even longer to wait for Qatar. Mm. So, you know, silver linings and all that. Absolutely. we've got a little bit of time to wait, but we're nearly there. Right, let's start with this. Is there any particular area you'd like to start with? Goal, game, player, moment, anyone? Player.
I'd like to start with moment once Don's talking.
Right, let's start with player and then we'll go on to moment.
Sorry, Joe.
She got in first, mate. It's a birthday, Joe. We've got to give her something.
Yeah.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. Dawn, player of the tournament.
Player of the tournament, I'm a bit confused by, because they give it to Donnarumma. But then they've got a FedEx thing which actually records what players have done throughout the tournament, and in that Verratti came first and Luke Shaw came second. So I don't really understand why they give it to him. In my opinion, they've given it to a goalkeeper who didn't even get the Golden Glove, and what did he do more than Jordan Pickford? So for me, if it was going to a goalkeeper, it's surely the one who got the Golden Glove.
Just the Everton fan to say that.
Not at all. Pickford's actually gone up in my estimations in this tournament.
Yeah, so. He's done well. And you know, he gets a lot of stick done, and he's a thug. No, I'm only messing. He gets a lot of stick, and there was a lot of talk about should he play, should he be number one. And obviously, Nick Pope's injury, Joe, you'll know all about that, makes it a bit of an easy decision for Southgate, but he's number one, you know. I understand it as well,
and I agree with it based on the style of play. Some people have just an aura about them where you think, yeah, regardless of how you play for your club, you're an England player. I Sterling, Pickford, you know, Maguire sometimes can be a bit dodgy at the back, but these players just turn up for England. Like Gareth Southgate was saying the other day, we've got a club mentality now, and long may that continue. So if Pickford has to remain goalkeeper, then so be it, because he's very good at distribution, which is a major contributor to our style of play. Although that's quite silly, really, because the role of a goalkeeper is essentially to keep goal, but that's one of them things with modern football, I suppose.
Yeah. I think he does edge it for Southgate, doesn't he, in terms of distribution? Yeah. That's always been the debate. But in this tournament as well, he's played really well, aside from just his distribution. Joe, player of the tournament?
Player of the tournament for me, Raheem Sterling. From an England perspective, I like the bias of it. He's proved all the press and the fans wrong, who was imploring for him not to start against Croatia. You know, he got off to a flying start. Again, I mentioned just there, some players have an aura about him where you think, yeah, he's an England player. And I believe that's true for Sterling as well. You know, he might move on from Man City in the summer if Man City want to buy Jack Grealish. And I'm sure there'll be plenty of suitors for him. Would you take him back at Liverpool, David? Is the answer.
We had this debate actually watching one of the games with mates, and we said if he was relatively cheap, you'd take him back as... I don't think he gets in the starting 11, but I'd take him back just to sit on the bench.
After the rubbish you've given.
No, I know, I know. This is how it works, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? This is how it works. Look at you with Rooney anyway. Give me all that. I'd have him, the argument went, would you have Sterling or Coutinho back? And I was on the side of Sterling over Coutinho because I thought Coutinho was quite hit and miss even when he was a Liverpool player. Anyway, that's an argument for the Shankly Gates podcast, not so much for this one today. Yeah, but it's very hard. It's all right, mate. Very hard to argue with Sterling. He's had a fantastic tournament. Very hard to argue with Pickford as well, and Donnarumma. Donnarumma's been good as well throughout the tournament. Maybe not as good as Pickford, you could say.
Well, yeah, particularly because you say he's got really short arms. I mean, as a goalkeeper, he is quite short, and Donnarumma's so big.
Massive, isn't he?
And he got the golden glove. I just think if it's for a keeper, it's Pickford all day.
There's certainly an argument there. There's definitely an argument there. And I wonder how much that was swayed by the penalty shootout. I wonder if England had won the penalty shootout, would Pickford have got player of the tournament? Do you know what I mean? I think there's been a recency bias in that.
But he saved two as well, didn't he?
Yeah, I know, exactly. Exactly. So if I don't know, maybe if England would have won, he would have got player of the tournament, potentially. Maybe. Who knows?
Maybe.
I think for me, the player, I've picked someone who's excited me the most, and it's been Federico Chiesa. I think he's just absolutely fantastic footballer. He's just, every time he got the ball in every game, you just felt like something was going to happen. He's such an exciting footballer, a menace on the pitch. He's an old-fashioned, get the ball, I'm going to drive right at the fullback and see what I can do, and I just loved watching him. Spinazzola was good as well for Italy before he got injured, and Damsgaard would have also been someone I'd have put forward. I thought he was great for Denmark, and he'll end up getting a big move somewhere. Any other notable mentions you want to throw out there?
Chiellini,
go on, Joe.
Yeah, Chiellini, I'll have a look at some stats here, just get it up for you. Immense at 36 years old. 1.8 interceptions per game, 4 clearances per game, 2.8 aerial duels per game, and 2 clean sheets in 5 games played. He was a massive contributor to Italy's style. In the opening game against Turkey, he was stepping out with the ball into midfield as a 36-year-old, and that's phenomenal for an athlete to keep himself at that level of fitness, both mentally and physically, at his age. And apparently he's signing a new deal at Juventus, which will obviously benefit them going forward.
Yeah, some athlete him, some player him. Yeah, just it's crazy, isn't it, when you see these players. I think there's a swing in football now of players look after themselves that much.
Yeah.
Like Ronaldo. They're going to play forever. They're going to play into the 40s. I think Ronaldo will play till he's like 41, 42. He's in such good shape. Dawn, anyone you want to mention?
Well, I agree with Chiellini. He's, for me, like, everyone always goes on about the attacking players, don't they? And it's nice for it to be focused on a defender. He is 36, and he's what I would describe as an Al snide centre-half.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone was moaning on Twitter, oh, well, we prefer to lose than win the way that they did, with a picture of Saka being pulled back by his shirt. But you've got to do that, otherwise he's in behind and he's probably going to score. Yeah. Like, I agree with all the snideness of it. I think it's just nice to see like a bit of old-fashioned defending in there, a bit of a beast. The only other thing I'd say is the team of the tournament out today, and Luke Shaw doesn't make it, but Kyle Walker does. Don't understand that. I think Luke Shaw was one of our best players, you know, 3 assists, 1 goal from left back. I think he should have. On the FedEx thing where they were given points for different things they'd done in the tournament, Luke Shaw was second, and I think he definitely deserved to be in the team of the tournament.
Luke Shaw's a fantastic footballer, he really is. Where I work, the lad I work with, Alex, he has been absolutely waxing lyrical about Luke Shaw all season, and it's very, very easy to see why. He's been excellent. And then there was even some arguments about, you know, would Chilwell get in ahead of him? you know? And it was like, no. I don't think so. And then Trippier gets a start at left back in the first game. I'm thinking, you've got Luke Shaw there, who's absolutely on fire, playing really well. And I agree, Don, he should be in the team of the tournament. Let's just go through that team of the tournament then. You've got Donnarumma in goal, Kyle Walker, Leonardo Bonucci, Harry Maguire, Spinazzola, Jorginho, Højbjerg and Pedri in midfield, Chiesa, Lukaku and Sterling up front. Obviously, we've talked about Kyle Walker. Is there anyone else there, Joe, that you think is either a strange inclusion or anyone that really deserves to be in that team?
Højbjerg had a good tournament, but you maybe got a question why he's in there. You'd probably, I don't know, put a bigger name in like Mount or Spinazzola. I'd say while Spinazzola was playing, he had more of an impact on the tournament than Højbjerg himself. So that's a potentially strange one for me, but I'll give it to them. They've had a good tournament, and there was everybody's second team of the tournament, really, which is what we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, they had to be, didn't they, until the semi-final. Yeah. One for you, Elsa. I know you've mentioned that you thought Shaw should have been in. Is there anyone else you think might have made it?
Jordan Pickford. Pickford, Shaw. I think... I'm not sure that Højbjerg did any better than the likes of Rice. I mean, Rice in the final was absolutely outstanding. That's the best game I've ever seen him play. So probably just, I mean, you could say it's probably a bit biased, but in the final, I thought he was outstanding and he got further than Højbjerg. But the other question is, you get the golden boot, you get the golden glove and you don't make the team. Like, should Ronaldo be in there as well? Question mark.
Potentially, yeah. I'd also say Verratti. I know you mentioned him earlier on, but Verratti's had a great tournament for me. I think the front three are fantastic, aren't they? Sterling, Chiesa, Lukaku. You could probably mention Ronaldo in front of Lukaku, potentially, with the golden boot. Even Patrick Schick's probably unlucky to not to make it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, on the whole, Lukaku is a top player.
He was great in the other games, wasn't he? Just got bullied by the two centre-halves for Italy.
Yeah. Very, very wise, them two centre-halves. Know what they're doing, don't they?
Let them know you're there. Early doors, put them in stand.
That's it. As you say, old-fashioned defender. And as you said, though, when he pulled, when Chiellini pulled Saka back, that's funny. That's just like, he knows he's being done and he knows that the only way to stop him getting any further is to pull him back and take the yellow. And do you know what? More fool England for not putting them in more situations like that. That's exactly what they needed to do to beat Italy, was get Saka one-on-one with Chiellini, get, you know, Sterling one-on-one with Bonucci and really try and open them up out wide.
Yeah, there's a few times that when Chiellini and Bonucci were like high-fiving each other, they were sort of like we survived that one, so we were testing them, but like you say, just not enough.
They should have been sent off, one of them. They should have had them sent off. You know what I mean? Like, or at least get them close to being sent off. That's how you win that game, I think. Yeah. But anyway, Joe, you want to talk about moments of the tournament next?
From an England perspective, for me, you know our buzz off atmosphere and experiences. And Dom was there for this one. When the England players surrounded in a line and sang Sweet Caroline with the supporters, as an England fan, that's all I've ever wanted, to see a bit of emotion and passion from the team. I really enjoyed that one, loved that one. But the more poignant one is when the fans came together after the horrific incident to Christian Eriksen and they sang his name in the stadium. That's what it's all about for me. So we've got to put that one up above the England bias there for me.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go after you on that, because mine is linked to Eriksen. And it was when Denmark got through to the last 16.
Yeah.
Just like that, because obviously they were waiting to see the other results. And you take it all into account with what happened to Eriksen, and they get the win in the last game, and they're all on the pitch in a big huddle, and the manager's got live score on his phone, and they're just refreshing, waiting to see if they get through, and then they do. That would have been my moment of the tournament. Dawn, for you?
Yeah, similar really, I think, like the Eriksen stuff. So when the press were getting a bit too close when he went down, and the players and the captain rallied everyone round. Now the captain looked after Eriksen's wife and stuff like that. That was one of them. But from a personal perspective, it was the semi-final and what Joe described before, like at the end when we come through and come back and Sweet Caroline and stuff like that. The atmosphere was just amazing.
What was it? So tell us a bit more about it, Dawn, because I know you were there and I know you've mentioned it before, but what really, really sticks out for you? Because how close were you to the players and stuff like that? What was it like? Set this picture for us.
So where they sang, we were sort of that side, so they were singing to us, if you like. We were in, you know, there's like three tiers. There's like a middle tier that's quite small. That's the Club Wembley one. I don't know how we got tickets for there, but we did. So I was literally standing at the front row there, still quite away from the pitch, not part of the crowd that you could see on the camera, but close enough to zoom in and get a few good videos and photos. But yeah, the atmosphere was just, it was incredible. And even sort of when we went behind, the crowds were still going, which I thought was a bit disappointing in the final because everything went quiet when they took charge of the game, whereas I think, you know, the crowd, we've proven over this short period of time the difference that fans make in a stadium. And it was just amazing.
Yeah, definitely. It's I was saying this early on in the tournament that the games in Hungary with full stadiums were always fantastic games, even though they probably weren't that much better than, you know, like a normal game on that was getting played in, I don't know, Wembley in front of a few thousand, or the ones at Hampden Park where there was hardly anyone there, and Baku where there's hardly anyone there. The ones in Hungary with full stadiums were just so good because it was the fans being back in the ground. Before we move on, let's have a little chat about that, because obviously we're all preparing to go back to football stadiums next season. So Dawn, I mean, you can't wait to get back to Goodison Park, which, I mean, to be fair, you haven't got many seasons left there either, so you'll be cherishing them.
Yeah, a few more seasons left at the old lady. Yeah. We scored a goal and everywhere shakes. Yeah, can't wait to get back. It's been like such a long time. I was lucky enough to be one of the ones that got a ticket to the Arsenal game the back end of last year. And even with, it wasn't the same, but you know, even with 2000s fans there, that was one of the games we did win at home. So it does have a difference, particularly on some of our shallower players, if you like. But I can't wait to get back. I mean, we go the aways as well, so we're even looking at trains to Leeds and Burnley. Yeah, mm-hmm. Burnley's Boxing Day, I think. We're looking at trains and stuff to go to these grounds. Obviously, we don't know if it's going to be full stadiums yet and if away fans are going to be there, but yeah, looking forward to get back.
I'd certainly like to think so. I'd like to think away fans. That's certainly what we're looking forward to as well. Not at away on the opening day, getting that planned. I think we play Leeds away around my birthday as well, so that's getting looked at. My only worry is how long is it going to be open for, because they're already saying, like, yeah, we're coming out of lockdown, but it's not irreversible. They've already kind of hinted at that. Yeah. So I wonder how long in the season are we going to get before they say, right, no more. We're closing down again. I think we spoke about this with the COVID certifications. I think the Premier League are trying to use the certificates as a way to stay open should a potential lockdown come again, because then you can say, well, there's no risk of, you know, hospitalisation or death because they're vaccinated, so it's fine. I'd like to see what happens with that, but I am certainly looking forward to getting back to a full football stadium. There's nothing like it. There's just nothing like it. I mean, I look back at the last season, we all were allowed to go for the full season. I don't even know if it was a full season or not, actually. I think we got stopped halfway through that. And I remember Sadio Mane scoring in the last minute against Aston Villa, and it just, away, just crazy. I haven't been somewhere like that for a long time, and it was just ridiculous. And I miss those moments. I really do. Joe, are you excited to get back to Turf Moor?
Yeah, absolutely. If we're getting a bit deep on this podcast, I'll talk about, you know, Bill Shankly was a famous socialist, and him and many other managers used to say, these people spend the hard-earned money on a weekly basis at work to come and watch you, so it's our job to entertain them. You know, football allows us to escape for a few brief moments and forget about our troubles. So, yeah, absolutely looking forward to getting back on the turf, because very much like Anfield and Everton, there's literally houses almost touching the stadium. So our football clubs are in the heart of the community. And for me, that's what football's all about, you know, coming together, loads of different races, religions, everything really. And yeah, looking forward to getting back on. And what an atmosphere across all the country in unison at one moment when full stadium capacities do return. I imagine there'll be lots of hugging from random people and things like that. Lots of alcoholic beverages to be consumed.
Oh, yes. I think all the stadiums will run out of ale by half-time. My only worry is if they still got kegs in there from the last time they were open, because that's going to be a moody pint, that, if you get that. You get the first pint.
It's rubbish what they have in Goodison anyway.
Yeah, it is. They still sell Chang in Goodison.
They don't anyway.
Do you know what I thought? I'll miss Goodison. I will. It's something special about it, isn't it? Like, even as a Liverpool fan, there's not unlike Goodison Park anywhere in the world. It's unique.
It's proper old-fashioned stadium, isn't it?
It's something special about it. And I hope that the new ground isn't a soulless bowl, even though I will be able to actually watch the game of football that I've paid to watch at this point. But anyway, let's move on. Let's go to, what should we go for next? Should we go for game or goal?
Game.
Game. Go for it, Joe.
For me, France versus Switzerland was a real game for me. I'll bring my grandma back onto this podcast. She turned the game off because she thought France had won it. As I rang her and said, "Are you still watching this game?" She didn't realise that it were 3-3 because she'd wanted France to go out for political reasons, but we won't get into that. Switzerland put in a real performance. It was an end-to-end game, and Every moment they seemed like there was a goal, and you never counted Switzerland out. They had a real fight within them. So yeah, that one for me was brilliant, and obviously it probably helped England get to a final, if this makes sense, by France going out. I know that sounds a bit cowardly because you got to play whoever's in front of you, but I would have probably thought we would have got smashed if we played France in the final, to be honest with you. So we had a better chance of beating Italy for me.
Yeah, some game that. Dawn?
Yeah, well, I agree about France going out. That I think that they were one team that if we played them, I think they would have probably battered us. There's a few games, isn't there? I've written a few down, like, but that's one of them. I wanted France to go out because I didn't want us to play them. So the fact that they did, and one of my favourite moments actually was in that game where the goalkeeper flicks his hand to the left. When Mbappe is running up to take the penalty, and I think that makes him put it the other side, and he gets a hand on it and saves it. So, yeah, I probably agree with that game.
Yeah, I had that one down, but I also had the one before it. I think that day it was Spain, Croatia before it, wasn't it? Was it the same day? I think.
Yeah.
So I was kind of similar to your grandma, Joe, in the sense that Spain were 3-1 up. And I was like, that's that, done and dusted. Took the dog out for a walk, was listening to it on 5 Live. And when it went 3-3 Croatia, I just remember being like not far away from home and going, wow. And obviously, I'm listening to it in my headphones, and there's a fella just walking up the other side of the street looking at me like, what have I done? But then you can't explain to him, like, oh yeah, Croatia have just scored. I've just had to keep walking with my head down. It was one of them moments that really makes you just sort of go, wow, they haven't done that, have they? Like, unbelievable. And two really similar games in the sense that, you know, both 3-1, both went to 3-3, and then obviously Spain get the winner in extra time. And the other one goes all the way to penalties. So great day of football. I think if you were picking a day of the tournament, that I'd probably be it. It was just two brilliant games of football that day.
The last day of the group of death, when Portugal were going through, then they weren't going through, and they'd be second, and then Hungary were in it, and then Germany were out, and it was like, whoa, what's happening here? I thought that was quite exciting.
That last group game, the last day is always excellent. Always. You know, as much as I love the early part of the tournament where there's three games a day and it's football, football, football. Well, in Qatar, it's going to be 4 games a day. So it'll be football, 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 football. You're going to be knackered. You can't beat that last group game because it's all on the line. Them early ones can be a little bit tense and a little bit sort of like, oh, we'll play it safe. Them last ones, it's all out. Joe, anyone else that you want to add there? Any other days or games?
Just the whole tournament in general, really. I can't really think off the top of my head. My head's been frazzled with football. But yeah, I've just been really pleased with this tournament. I don't necessarily come on here with stats and in-depth analysis, but I come on from the heart, and I've really enjoyed this tournament. Yeah, so I haven't got any off the top of my head, but there you go.
If there's one thing Joe gives, it's his heart. more than anything else. And Joe, I think we'll come to that now before we do goal of the tournament. You've put your heart on paper for Gareth Southgate, haven't you?
Yeah, it's not a love letter, don't we? But it kind of is.
would you like to read it for us?
Yeah, my head might be coming through the screen because I'll have to lean forward to read it on another document. But if I enter your living room, just let me know. One second.
Give him a chance. So Dawn, he's basically written quite a long letter.
Yeah.
To Gareth Southgate. For those of you that don't know, Joe, he's been very much a Gareth Southgate advocate for the entire tournament. He was calling for a knighthood before England even played the game, I think, by the sound of it.
Yeah.
Joe, crack on, mate, and tell us what you've written.
Dear Gareth, as I'm sure many of us are doing today, I am writing you this letter to express my sincerest gratitude for what yourself, the staff and the players have done for this country. For the past month, you have united a nation at a time when it's been most divided. There has perhaps never been a better time to be an England fan, and that is down to you. I've followed your journey as a manager closely for the past 3 years, and I have the utmost admiration for you as a person way beyond any football result. This is the funny part. Although in the interest of transparency and honesty, I have a confession to make. For many years, I felt a sense of disconnect and resentment towards the England team for what I felt was its lack of identity and affinity with the fans. I am someone who feeds off emotion, energy and experiences more than anything else, and throughout my life, I have heard stories of Gareth's tears, Stuart Pearce's penalty celebration in 96, the boys of 66, and the impact they had on our country. I wanted that for my generation, a team in which we could relate to, and I became disheartened when we were not getting that. That leads me to the main part of my confession. At the start of your tenure, I wrongly called you a yes man, which I wholeheartedly apologise for, because that could not be further from the truth. In my frustration at the team, I also wrote a Facebook post as a 17-year-old saying, "Come on, Scotland," when we drew with them at Hampden Park. But believe it or not, behind that post was a boy yearning for a team to be patriotic about. I love this country, Gareth, and everybody in it. And our national sport has the power to bring us all together, like it did in this tournament and in 2018. At the start of the World Cup, I had resigned myself to another summer of disappointment, and my friends tried and failed to get me in the spirit until something changed. The moment that swung it for me was after the penalties win against Colombia, when you screamed, "Come on." I knew then that you and this group of players were different, and that the outpouring emotion from you let me know that you are all with us and that you are all one of us. Some may call it glory hunting, as my support came back when the team were doing well, but I can honestly say the result then and the subsequent ones are secondary to me. It is about having something to get behind and be a part of, whilst knowing that we are all on the same page. That is why when people say to me, "Why do you like Gareth Southgate so much?" I say, because he cares. If you lost the next 6 matches in a row, I would say the same thing. You and the players are also not afraid to speak out on issues outside of football, such as racism and mental health, which has influenced a generation, including me, more than you will ever know. If I may, I'd like to give you a brief background on myself. I'm a 21-year-old wheelchair user from Padding, Lancashire, with a condition called cerebral palsy, and I'm also an avid Burnley FC season ticket holder. I have had my struggles with mental health over the years due to bereavements and finding it difficult to accept the way society is in regards to disabled access and equality. But in August 2018, I began to take control of my situation. Since then, I've become a level 1 football coach on Burnley FC in the Community's Disability Sports Project, started a multimedia sports journalism degree at UCFB Etihad, and raised £8,097.64 for my local hospice during a 100-round charity boxing challenge during the pandemic. On my way back to positive mental well-being and achieving these things, I took inspiration from yourself, Tyson Fury, and David Goggins. I still have my off days, but I stay calm during those and do the right things like daily exercise and mental stimulation, which help me win more battles than I lose. There are too many words to write in one letter, Gareth, but I hope I get to meet you one day to thank you for what you have done for me and so many others. Thank you for taking the time to read this letter. Yours sincerely, Joe Skinner.
I love it, Joe. I love it. It's just great, mate. Just to see, as you say, I am not an England fan by any stretch of the imagination, but to see someone so, like, yeah, what it's done for you is just brilliant. Dawn, what did you make of it?
I was trying not to cry, to be honest. That's why I didn't speak straight away. Joe, that's really good. You're a good man. You are. That's just...
Thank you.
Like, a lot of the things that you say about getting behind the country, like, obviously you're too young to remember Stuart Pearce and all that stuff that happened, sort of. I was a massive England fan back in the day, and the same as you, lost hope and lost, you know, where there was nothing to get behind. And we've got a good group of players, and we've got a manager that cares, and hopefully they can do something. But it's great that you've had an influence on your life as big as he has. And
we've,
it's
got a
really
comment
good letter
here as well. I think, is this a relation to you, Dawn, Amelia? Joe, you've just had me in tears. How lovely you are. You've just spoken the total truth that is in your heart. What a lovely person you are.
That's my mum.
Is right, Dawn's mum. Love all that. She's right. She's spot on, mate. She's spot on. And I really hope that Gareth sees that letter at some point. You meet him. I really do. Because he's not just saying this either because England got to a final and, you know, all this. He's been saying this since the start. So he's, I mean, even though he's kind of admitted to being a bit of a glory hunter.
Yeah.
He's not, because he's been with them since Colombia. Do you know what I mean? So that's fair enough, mate. And I really hope something comes of it for you.
And I'm telling you now, me mum would have been crying a leg off to that. I mean, I'm quite emotional as well. But
I was when I read it. I was.
I don't want to cry on here.
Good. Yeah, cry, Dawn. It's your birthday. It's having in tears.
He's not going to cry if I want to.
But we'll see what we can do, mate. We'll see what we can do and help you. Right. What did we not cover? Was it goal of the tournament? Goal of the tournament. Dawn, give us a goal of the tournament.
I've written a few down. I think the one that Sheik scored for the Czech Republic, what a great individual goal that was. De Bruyne for Belgium, there was a great team goal there where there were so many passes and a great finish from him, but great team goal. And Ronaldo, when he scored a boss counter-attack. Oh, and just one last other one to throw in, Christian from Denmark, a blast from about 25, 30 yards out for a centre-half, and that deserves a round of applause.
Yeah, it does. That was some goal. That was some goal. I've got a few of them down myself, certainly the Christensen one. Joe, before we get on to mine, what did you go for?
Damsgaard was an incredible goal as well in the same game, but yeah. I've obviously gone for Patrick Schick for the fact that it was against Scotland. You know, we all love him for that. Thank you, Patrick. that one for me, he plucked it out of the air, I think. I can't fully remember about that far now, but yeah, just a surreal goal. And I won't mind him at Burnley, so if you're littering, Patrick, call me, mate, you know.
Joel, make things happen for you at Burnley.
Yeah,
I mean, I've got quite a few goals down that I'll go through all of them now. The Chiesa one against Spain for Italy in the semi-final.
Yeah.
I just love the way he cuts in and the ball, the technique and the trajectory of the ball are perfect. I loved Aaron Ramsey's goal against Turkey when he goes in behind, brings that ball down on his chest and scores. I had Christensen and Damsgaard down that we've both talked about. Modric's goal against Scotland with the outside of his foot was some finish. Insigne scored a couple of good goals. First one on the opening day against Turkey. Just curls it on the inside. And he does a similar one, but from outside the box against Belgium. But I think if I had to pick one out of all of them, it'd be Yarmolenko against Holland. I think out of all of the goals that have been scored, I do really love Chiesa's goal in the semi-final. But Yarmolenko's is from well outside the box, left footed, top corner. I mean, you can't get it any closer to the top corner. And that was a fantastic game as well because it was 2-0 to Holland and then Ukraine bring it back to 2-2. And obviously Holland go on and win it. But that goal was a brilliant goal for me. And you look back at these goals and you think, do you know what? There's been some brilliant goals in this tournament, some great games. I can't wait for the World Cup already. I just can't wait for the World Cup. Like, as international football, as you've said, no one will talk about it now for the next year and a half. because England are going to get right through the group. They won't need to talk about it. But then when the World Cup comes around, it's special, isn't it? There's something special. How much are you looking forward to the World Cup?
Yeah, me personally, just a brief one before that. You talk about the boring feeling we get with like international friendlies. I totally agree. And do you feel like there should be some more competitive competitions in between that? Obviously, we've got the UEFA Nations League, but they feel like glorified friendlies and nobody really wants to watch. That's quite bad, really, isn't it? But yeah, I totally understand why people don't, because there's nothing really riding on these games. But I don't really know what you could do to change it, really.
I think the Nations League has done something. It's had a positive step forward.
Yeah.
It's got rid of, like, as you say, pointless friendlies, which you should only really play friendlies for England in the lead up to a big tournament for me.
Yeah.
That's when you warm up. That's when you get your tactics right and stuff like that. So I think, I mean, the Nations League is better than having pointless friendlies. It's still not ideal. But then I think if you start having another major tournament, are you kind of diluting the specialness of the Euros and the World Cup? Like, we have to wait for the World Cup and the Euros for that reason. Do you know what I mean? So I wonder if that's a wise idea. Dawn, World Cup, you looking forward to it?
Yeah, just touching on what you were saying there, I think the physical demands on players, I mean, you've got all the club managers and that saying, oh, they need less football, less European, international football. So I'd probably say that was an issue. Friendlies are generally less physically demanding. World Cup, looking forward to it. I mean, the last three tournaments, we've come fourth, we've come third, we've come second. It never usually works like that. We probably won't win it, but, you know, we'll go into that with a bit of hope. I think the only thing that's going to be difficult for a lot of the players is the heat. It's meant to be, like, ridiculous there, isn't it?
Yeah. That's the reason why they've moved it to the winter. So it starts in November, because it's going to be too hot to play in the summer. But even in the winter, it's still going to be super hot. So apparently all the stadiums will have air conditioning built in to try and sort of keep it cool. But, I mean, are they still going to have to train in the heat? Or, you know, obviously they've still got to get about in the heat. I don't know. It's not something that most countries are used to. So it could affect... Certainly teams like England, it's never that hot in this country, is it? I mean, it was humid this morning, but it's not 40 degrees, you know. No. So we don't need air conditioning in our stadiums. Go on, Dawn.
What happens with the domestic season then?
It just stops halfway through. Which isn't ideal either, is it?
Cause... No, because you could be Everton could be winning the Premier League. I was just gonna say
imagine this scenario, having to sing the John Bonds rap in November while it's freezing. You have to get some rocket lollies out the fridge or whatever.
Well, this is the thing, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, you know, the World Cup and the Euros makes money for pubs and beer gardens and stuff like that. And this year, the next World Cup, I should say, is that going to be, I don't know, people going to go and sit in a beer garden when it's -1, teeming with rain?
The only thing you'd say is they're more equipped now because of COVID, aren't they? There's a lot of them that have got heaters and stuff, so hopefully they'd be prepared for that.
People will be wrapped up though, won't they? Like, hat on, scarf on, three layers, long johns, the lot. Because I think it's not quite a World Cup without all the beer gardens and people getting together to watch the football, is it? So I hope the fact it's in November doesn't really ruin it. But then is it going to be harder to... You put club loyalties aside at the end of the season. Are you going to be able to do that in the middle of the season?
Yeah, for me, like, controversially for some people, like, it's country over club. Like, that's what it means for me. I love Burnley, but I probably love England just that little bit more for how it makes me feel and how proud it makes me feel. But, yeah, I think it won't be a problem.
Okay. Dawn, what about you? I mean, if you know... I'm trying to think who might be in the squad from Liverpool, and I can't, to be honest. Certainly not going forward anyway. I mean, if Gomez scores a header, are you going to be able to celebrate that for England in the middle of the season? If Liverpool are second and Everton are first in the table?
I don't think when it comes to England playing that I hold anything against Liverpool players. You know, most of the time...
She does in the season.
Oh, yeah, of course I do in the season. particularly to wind you up, which is
pretty easy
most of the time. I wouldn't hold it against them. Can't see Gomez getting anywhere near the squad, to be honest. But no, I think the hard thing will be, it will literally be the Premier League. I mean, we've got no expectations for Everton to be at the top with Rafa in charge, but whoever it is,
he'll still be in charge by then.
No, yeah, he could be out by then.
No way.
So nice.
So nice, yeah. Southgate.
But whoever's top of the league when it closes down halfway through, if they lose the momentum and come back, like, I think that's going to be really hard for any team that's in that position. Or, you know, if it's close, say, between City and Liverpool as an example, and then for some reason Man United come back amazing and they end up winning it, that break could have a massive impact on whoever wins the Premier League. And then
it's a hell of an excuse. Go on, Joe.
I'll just jump in there. England could have given themselves a major claim to host that tournament if, for whatever reason, Qatar wasn't ready to, you know, like, put the stadiums up and things, but after Sunday's events, I doubt that.
Yeah, Dan, this is the thing. England are talking about bidding for the Euros and the World Cup and the Athletics and the Olympics and stuff like that. You're not going to get anything when they see things like that. Like, it's just, they're just going to go, no thanks, we'll go somewhere else.
But 2012 was amazing, wasn't it? The Olympics, that went amazingly well. Yeah. Apart from Sunday, everything else has gone well at Wembley.
It's football, isn't it? It's football. It's when the idiots get tickets to the games or even don't get tickets to the games and start going, trying to rush the stadium and stuff like that. It's totally wrong. Yeah. And the policing will need sorting out big time for a major tournament. It's almost like, because it's not really fully been in England, they've half cooked it and sort of gone, well, it's not really an English tournament because it's been everywhere. The final's in Wembley, you know, we'll just do what we usually do for a whatever final. But yeah, it never worked.
But with the images they've got with the CCTV, I mean, they need to find out who these people are, because like the racism and anything like that, it's the minority. It's a small percentage of the people that are match-going fans that do this. And it ends up, you know, if we don't get like World Cup 2030 or whatever it is, it'll be because of those stupid people that have done that and lost it for everyone. You know, if you listen to what Joe said before, doesn't Joe deserve the right to sort of go to a game in England in a major tournament because of how much he loves his country?
Definitely.
You do, Joe?
I think he might get you a season ticket, mate. You never know.
Yeah, I'm going to sign up to the England Supporters Travel Club today, actually. Okay. 75 quid, though. I'm a bit tight, me, so you never know.
A lot of money, mate, isn't it? 75 quid. You get a lot of dark fruits for 75 quid.
Oh, yeah, you seen that, did you?
Seen that, yeah. Seen you having a little whale of that. How did you find it, by the way?
I only had a few sips. I'm a bit weird like that. I can have a good time without alcohol.
You're still young, mate. You certainly can have a good time without alcohol. I seen him singing Sweet Caroline. the rest of the place to shame, I tell you. Right. Thank you both for your time this morning. You certainly you as well, Dawn, with your birthday. I hope you've got some nice plans.
I got a message the other day. I've got to self-isolate. It doesn't finish till midnight tonight, so I'm not going anywhere anyway.
So tomorrow then, get yourself out for, you know, a nice steak or something. Or
I don't eat red meat. It's bad.
You don't eat red meat? Okay. No. Chicken carbonara.
Bit of chicken, yeah.
Bit of chicken carbonara or something. Yeah. Get yourself up there. Now have a good one. Enjoy as much as you can being stuck in the house.
Thank you. I will do.
And thank you, Joe, as well for your letter and all your time, mate. I've really appreciated it. And of course, thank you to all the other contributors who've been on. There's too many to go through and name, but without you lot, we would not be able to do this. So thank you. It's been, I think we've done about 20 odd shows now, every day since the start of the tournament, apart from a few weekends. So. Without you lot, we would not have been able to do it.
Thanks to you, David.
Yeah. No, thanks to you. Wouldn't have happened without you. Would not have happened without you. It's a pleasure.
It's been really fun to be involved, though, and it's been great to meet people like Joe as well. So
definitely, yeah.
Likewise.
I think we've got Taran to thank for that. Taron introduced them to.
Shout out Taron.
Shout out to my man Taron, yeah, definitely.
Taron's not bad for a red.
He's all right, isn't he? Yeah.
He's all right for a red, yeah.
Out of all of us, he's probably the least volatile, would you say?
He's Mr. 1-1.
Yeah, he is, isn't he? He's Mr. 1-1, or if he has to, it's 2-1. He absolutely has to, it's 2-1. So, yeah, thank you. Thank you, everyone who's been involved. Thank you, everyone who's listened and watched. Of course, you'll be able to listen to this last episode on Amazon and Spotify and on Alexa. I'll say that quietly in case anyone's got one. And, yeah, stay tuned, because obviously when the football season comes back, we'll have podcasts across the cities once again, like we did last season, hopefully with a few more, and we'll hopefully have a few more interesting things to bring to the table. So stay tuned to Local TV, and yeah, thank you. We'll catch you all again when the season starts. Have a good summer.